This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
So, Mishnah tells us in Masechet Ta'anit that the first calamity of Tisha B'Av, the ninth of Av, was that the spies came back with a spurious report, a negative report of what they had seen. And as the Gemara tells us, that then the people cried that night a bechi shel chinam, an unnecessary cry, and said, God, if you cried unnecessarily, I will give you a reason to cry, and that is Tisha B'Av. And therefore, throughout our history, Tisha B'Av has become the day of mourning, has come the day of calamity, and everybody can go through history and can say things that happened on Tisha B'Av ad Yameinu Anu until today. And what we wanted to look at this year is, why did the spies bring a bad report? What was the reason for their bad report? And so we're going to start with you looking at the verses. And what we want to look at the verses is, what was their mission and where did they go? And the Torah is quite explicit about both of those. So we're going to take 5 minutes to look at the verses. It's on the first page of the handout. It's from the book of Bamidbar, and it is chapter 13. We're going to look at verses 17 to 33. That's the verses there. And we want to look at, what is their mission and where did they go? Okay, so let's take out 5 minutes to do that in your chavruta. Okay, we're good? Everybody's good? We finished? We're done? Yeah? Okay, someone want to volunteer? What was their mission? Someone want to volunteer? Put a hand. Anyone want to see what their mission was? Well, yeah, sir. What do you say? Intelligence. Okay, they were a mission of intelligence. What does the verse tell us? What was the intelligence going to take hold of? Somebody here? Somebody wanted to suggest here? Yes, madam. Okay, so your interpretation, it's not exactly what it says. Your interpretation is, they were sent out to see what the land was like so that we could conquer it and what our chances were. That's your question. That's actually interesting, because God said they're going to get into this land. So I guess they would have to, if they believed in God, maybe they would rely that it would be okay. It's a good question. Yes, madam. So they wanted to prepare the method of how they were going to get in, which maybe dependent on the exact fortification would make a difference. Yes. Oh, they're completely different. They want agricultural. How do you see agricultural? It's a lot about fruit, about what's going on in agriculture. That's a good point. Yes, sir. Oh, that's interesting. So maybe it's how it's going to be divided among the tribes, that each tribe has a different bent, a different job, and maybe they would look that, I'll take that place. That's interesting. Yes. Right. Strength of the people, so that seems to be military. Fortified town seems to be military. We've spoken about this before in years gone by, about exactly what they were looking for. So there's an interesting exactly what their job is. And what seems to be clear, just from the answers here, it wasn't so clear what the job was. The verses are very clear. The verses say, go and see what is there. Are the people strong? Are they weak? Are they in fortified cities? Are they poor? What's the soil like? That's very clear. But why they were doing it, what exactly was their mission? We understand that if I send out a recognized mitten to some town, there's got to be beyond just what are you looking for. There has to be some reason for that. And that's a lot of your interpretation, your sort of creative midrash that we had it. It's not written in the verses, but it's potential. Somebody here at the back want to say something? Yes. All right, so what's the point of good or bad? And that's, as we said before, that maybe they wanted to know how they were going to get in. God never says that. He says, go in. He doesn't say how. That's a good question. Yes? Also didn't say how long? Doesn't say how long they're going to go. How long do they go for? 40 days. Is that significant, 40 days? Why? 40 days is right. 40 is like a big number in the Torah. Yes, sir. I say maybe Moshe has doubt. That would be interesting, because we would sort of see that reflected, I think, in God's words to Moshe later on, that that's the reason he can get into the land. Interesting. Where do they go? Well, let's see the places they go. Let's look at it together. וישלח אותם משה לתור את הארץ, את ארץ כנען, ויאמר אליהם, עלו זה בנגב ועליתם את ההר. So where are they going to go? Go up into the Negev and ascend the mountain. What is the mountain? Ahar. If you say in Israel, Ahar, which means what? Har Habayit, Har Sinai, Har Hermon, Har Tavor, Har Hashomron. The central ridge where there's mountains. Manyan, we don't know where the har is. Okay. And you'll see the people that dwell there. Are they strong or poor? Few or many. What is the land itself? Is it rich or poor? Is it lush? And are the cities fortified? Are they open? Is it wooded or not? We spoke about that last year, about it. You should be strong. And take from the fruit. And that's sort of in parentheses. And it was the season of the ripe grapes. Okay, now let's see where they went. They went from Midbar Tzin עד רחוב לבוא חמת, until they came to חמת. ויעלו בנגב, and they went up in the Negev, ויעבור עד חברון, they came to חברון, ושם חימי ששי תלמי ילידי הענק, and there was these people, the giants, וחברון שבע שנים נבטה לפני צוען מצרים, again that's in parentheses, חברון was 7 years prior to צוען מצרים, ויעבור עד נחל אשכון, they come to נחל אשכון, we spoke about that. 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Ve'ichatu misham zemora ve'eshkol anavim. They took from Nachal Eshkol grapes. Ve'yesu b'mot b'shnayim, and two people carried it. V'min harimonim v'min hatanim. They took from the pomegranates and the figs. L'makom hu kara Nachal Eshkol. They called it Nachal Eshkol. Al odot ha'eshkol asher katu misham b'nei Yisrael. Because of the Eshkol, because of this grape cluster. Ve'eshuv mitor aretz miketz 40 yom. At the end of 40 days, they came back. They come to Midbar Paran. So these are the places we have. We have Negev, Har, Midbar Tzin, Chamat, Hebron, Nachal Eshkol, Yam, and Hayarden. They go to the Yarden and Ahar, as we said. Where are those? Why are those places significant? What do you think? Why are those places important? Why does the Torah go into great detail here saying where those places are? Do we know where those places are? Okay, I need two volunteers. Who's going to volunteer? I have to do something very simple. Come up. Somebody else? Just here, come up. Okay, so I want to hold the top of the mat. Hold it up. I want to hold the bottom of the mat. Just stays open. You're good? You got it? Okay, here's Eretz Yisrael. Hold it up a little bit. Okay, where are these places? Okay, Hanegev. Where's Hanegev? So here, it's here really, Hanegev, right? This is at the bottom here. Okay, that's Hanegev. Where's Midbar Tzin? This is Midbar Tzin. It's just here. Okay, just above Hanegev. Chamat is where? Anybody ever been to Chamat Gader? Chamat Gader is up here. So I'm going to put it here. Okay, just so we have room on our map. Chamat, but Chamat, the Chamat of the Torah, is in Lebanon today. It's well beyond the borders of Israel. Where's Hebron?
Right, so Hebron is here.
Nachal Eshkol is where? Where's Nachal Eshkol? Nachal Eshkol, we have no idea where it is. The Machloket in the Mefarshim, where exactly is Nachal Eshkol? We're going to follow the Malbim. Because the Malbim says it makes sense that when they left Hebron, they went south, because they're going back, to Nachal Eshkol.
So we're going to put it here.
Okay? Then we have Hayarden. Where's the Yarden?
Okay, here's the Yarden. Maybe even more south, more north. We're going to put the Yarden here.
Where's, now we have two that we don't know where they are. Hayam, which Yam? Which are the three possibilities?
Here, or here.
We have no idea, because it didn't say which yam. And then we have Hahar. Where's Hahar?
Jerusalem.
That's a great guess. But it never says that. Now, I'm going to hazard a guess that they want Hahar. What do they want to go on Hahar? They want to see what? They want to see the whole of the land. Where is the Hahar that's most likely going to see the whole land? What? Meron? Maybe.
I think maybe here. Maybe they want to look on this range here. So they're going to be trying to look over the land. So that's what we have. Thank you so much. You guys are doing great.
Okay. Turn it around a little bit so everybody can see. Okay. This is their mission. This is where they went. This is at the bottom here. So they went all the way up to Hamat. And they come, they go here and here and here and here and here. And Rashi, if you learn the parasha of Shlach well, says they go in Tzurat Gam. Gam is like a opposite resh. It's the Greek letter G. It goes like a curve this way. So that's what they do. They go up here and they go to here because they go to Yam. So maybe Yam is more here. That's where they go. Where do they not go? They don't go to Jerusalem. They don't really cover this whole area here, where the Plishtim are, the Ashdodim, Ashkelon, Kiryat Gat, none of that is covered.
And there's a huge link between Yarden and this whole area is not covered. Thank you so much. You did a great job. We might need you a little later. But we're going to leave it on the side. Thank you so much. You did a great job.
What? Excellent. So, is that a normal course of route? I mean, if we were saying we're going to look out the land, is that the route we go? We go first to Hamat? How long did it take, you think, to get by foot from, where are they? Etzion Gava, they're in Kadesh. Where is that? That's Eilat. That's at the tip of our map. They're going, walking from Eilat to Hamat, which is in Lebanon. And coming back, how long would it take them? Throw out a guess. Anybody ever done Shvil Yisrael? Shvil Yisrael takes, we had a bit of an argument last night, we're trying to work it out at home. Something in the range of 50 days walking. That's one way, not full there and back. How is it possible that these 12 spies go to Hamat, and the Yarden, and the Yam, and Hebron, and all of these places, and get back to Kadesh in 40 days? Oh, we're going to get to your answer in a moment. So when the Torah, we've all read these verses before. Not only have we read them here before. But we have to notice when the Torah tells us such an important element like place is anchoring us in a geography. It's anchoring us in a reality. When you say Hebron, and that's where Achai Tamayin, that's where they were, we know where Hebron is. That's got to be significant. It's not just the Torah threw out a few names. And when it tells us they went to Hamat, that's important. Those the Torah's description of where they went is going to tell us something about the story. It's not just a description of, you know, my holiday in Israel. And you have pictures of this is where we went. There's some reason why the Torah tells us that. So we're going to come back to that. And we completely ignore the title, which is Why Lose Hope? That was our title. Who lost hope? Let's look at the following piece of Talmud on the next page. It's a Gemara at the end of the third parak of Baba Batra. And the Gemara tells us the following. We'll learn it together. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. Lo yasud adam et beito besid. A person should not plaster their house with plaster. Ve'imirei bochol o teven mutar. But if he mixed it with sand or straw, it's permitted. Rabbi Yehuda omer, irei bochol arei ze tarsid. Va'asur, teven mutar. If he mixed it with sand, it's not okay. It's white cement, it's prohibited. But if he mixed in straw, it is permitted. What is the Gemara speaking about just there? Ma. Anybody, you're not allowed to whitewash your wall? What is it talking about? So the Gemara is talking about a very interesting set of halachot, which we call Zechel Chorban, we are supposed to do certain things out of a memory, a recollection of the Churban. Not only on Tisha B'Av, where we sit on the floor and say, Kinot B'chu. But every day we have a recognition of the fact that we are in Churban HaBayit. So someone's going to throw out, what's the thing that we do that everybody remembers, Zecher L'Churban? What do? We break a glass at a wedding. Question, we break glass. Good question, right? We break a glass at a wedding. So that's, everybody remember. Then we say, Meshkechech Yerushalayim, we break glass and we shout Mazel Tov. That's not exactly a good order because it's not Mazel Tov on breaking the glass. It's Mazel Tov something else. Not Moshe. So that we do. So we have a various number of things that we do, Zecher L'Churban. One of the things that Gemara tells us is we're not supposed to completely whitewash our house, which is why the halacha has developed that we leave a certain portion up the doorway that is blank, that isn't whitewashed. That's Zecher L'Churban, what we call Amah Alama. And some people have the custom of writing a pasuk in that that reminds us of the Churban. Tanur Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, K'shecharav HaBayit B'Shnia, when the second temple was destroyed, which is really the era of the Gemara and the era of Halacha, the era of when normative Jewish behavior develops, is post-Bayit Sheni, post-second temple period. Rabu Purushim B'Yisrael, the Purushim, the aesthetics, increased in Israel, and they wanted Shelo Lechol Basar V'Shelo Lishtot Yayin. They wanted to make it a practice not to eat meat and not to drink wine. That we should all be vegetarian and we should all be teetotalers. We should never drink alcohol and never eat meat. Why? Nitpalehem Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua met with them. He said to them, my sons, my children, for what reason do you not eat meat and do you not drink wine? And what do they answer? Amrulo, Nochal basar, shemimenu makivim al gabei mizbeach, va'achshav batel. Nishte yayin, shenesachim amnaschim al gabei mizbeach, va'achshav batel. They said to him, how can we possibly eat meat that was the source of the offering on the temple, on the altar of the temple, and the temple, the altar now, isn't around? How can we possibly sit and have steak knowing that really meat was created in God's will to be offered on the altar, and the altar doesn't exist? And the same for wine. How can we drink wine which was poured as a libation onto the altar? And the whole point that we have wine is to serve God, and now the altar ceases to exist. We should not have meat, and we shouldn't drink wine. Not because we think it's some suffering, but in order that, how can we possibly, it's impossible that we would entertain the thought that we were able to consume things that in our association are temple items, and there's no temple. That's interesting because in the custom of Ashkenazim, not to eat meat and not to drink wine for the 9 days, we don't really think of it in those terms. We think of it as a bit of a suffering, like the Avel, at least at the beginning, Avelut, who does not eat meat and doesn't drink wine as a sign of mourning. But the Gemara puts it in completely different terms. The eating meat and drinking wine is not because of mourning. It's because those are temple things. In the same way that a person would not take out the Sefer Torah and read it on a Shabbat afternoon from the scroll, because that's a synagogue item, and a person wouldn't drink Coca-Cola from their Kiddush cup, because that's a holy item. So the same way, we cannot eat meat and can't drink wine, and in fact, that's a very good claim. And Rabbi Yeshua has to answer them, why does that not become normative Jewish practice? Amalahem, he said to them, if you're right, imkein, lechem no lochal, shekvar bidlu menachot. He said to them, if that's the case, we shouldn't eat bread either. Because bread is also, there's the lechem apanim, there's the meal offerings, there is wheat that is associated with servicing the temple. So also we shouldn't. So what are they? So what's the answer? Efshar beperot. It is possible with fruit. How do people understand that answer? So what are they saying? Should we eat bread or not? They say, well, that's a great idea. He wanted to come and to bring them back to normal. You should eat meat. It's okay to eat meat and drink wine. They said, and he said, so he made it even more extreme. If you're not eating bread and if you're not eating meat and drinking wine because of temple practice, so bread also. And they said, wow, that's a great idea. So then we shouldn't eat bread. Let's go back just to having fruit. You're right, we can survive on fruit. We can have a pure fruit diet. No bread at all. So he says to them, Aval peot lo nochal. But then you shouldn't eat fruit. Why? Shekvar bidlo abikurim. Because the four fruits that was also a temple service has also ceased to exist. What do they answer? Eshav peot achrim. We can have other type of fruit. The first fruit was only brought from the fruit of Eretz Yisrael, the Sheva Minim. There's not from Shivat Minim. So we won't eat grapes and pomegranates and dates and figs. We'll eat pineapple. There was no pineapple in the time. Bananas. There was no bananas in the time. Oranges. There were no oranges in the time. I know what other fruit they had. I get the hat. They must have had other fruit. It wasn't, but we don't know what it was. So, right? Carob. Carob would have. Oh, it's a good idea. So they'll eat carob like Rabbi Chaninu survived on carob. Good idea. He says, if that's the case, then mayim onishte. We shouldn't drink water. Because there's also no water offering. The water offering that was in the Beit HaMikdash in the temple on Sukkot has also ceased. Shatku. They were silent. What does it mean, shatku? When the Gemara tells us about somebody shatku, it means that they realize that their opinion has been defeated because it was extreme. Not because I'm wrong. It was extreme. And so this extreme approach of the Purushim, that anything temple-related should be put away, should be ganuz, should be put in a storehouse, and we can take that to the extreme that we won't eat anything, we won't drink water, and you can't survive without water, that's clear. So it's impossible. Shatku. There is a limit to Zeche Lechorban. Continues the Gemara, Shatku. Amar lehem, so he says, okay, now I put you on the spot. He said to them, my children, Banai, bo v'amar lehem, shelo litabel kol ikar, I efshar, shekvar nigzera gezera. Not to mourn at all, impossible. As a decree was already issued, the temple's been destroyed, we don't have a temple, so you can't not cry at all. Ulitabel yoter midai I efshar. But we can also not mourn too much. We have to find a balance between mourning and continuing to live. Why? Why do you think you have to find a balance between mourning and continuing to live? Why? What's the answer? What would be the end of the verse? End of the sentence? Because? What do people think? We have to live. Because what? We're going to get to the Gemara in a moment. I say, without a Gemara, what answer? Because God wants us to live, because God wants us to enjoy the world. There's a wonderful Gemara in a Yerushalmi that says, Atid en Sotan Yerushalmi, Atid Adam liten et adin al kol ma'shera'a b'olam hazeh v'lo ne'na mimenu. Eventually, a person will give reckoning for anything they saw in this world that didn't enjoy. Of course, Baruch made the world to enjoy, to be enjoyed, therefore, we have to enjoy it. That would be a good answer. That's not what I answer. What is the answer, Rabbi Yochanan? Because we only make a decree on the majority of the public, on the public, if the majority of the public can abide by it. That's a very, very sad answer. What does Rabbi Yochanan say to them? What does Rabbi Yehuda say to them? What does Rabbi Yeshua say to them? Are you right? You're right. But it's impossible to live like that. But the truth is, we shouldn't eat meat. We shouldn't drink wine. We shouldn't eat bread. We shouldn't eat fruit. We shouldn't drink water. You're 100% correct. And if I thought that most of the people were able to do that, I would be with you. I would join you, the Purushim. He doesn't say, oh my gosh, how can you live like that? What is he talking about? That's exaggerated. He says, you're right, but it's impractical. That's a very sad voice in the Talmud. Yeah. So you're saying it's really like he's saying, yeah. So he doesn't even stop them doing it. Just that shouldn't be normative practice. Good question. Good point. All right. Shenemar, it's a verse. B'meira atem nireim v'oti atem kovim agoy kulo. You have to be together, the whole nation. It's not important, the verse. V'kacham rachamim. Then we get back to our original idea. Sach adam et beito besid. A person does paint their house, plaster the house, has to leave a little amount. What's a little amount? Hearing what we said before, a ma'alama, a cubit by a cubit. And there are other things that a person should do that are zeichel l'chorban. Amar Rav Chisda, keneged apetach, it should be opposite the doorway. The person should make all the food that they want to make, but leaves a little bit. Mayhi, amar papa kasada harsana, a certain type of fish. You know, you go to the fish store, they have like a lot of fish. Don't buy all of the kinds of the fish. Leave one. Sardines we don't eat. Sardines we don't eat. I like anchovy, we'll leave them aside. So a person shouldn't eat all the food they could possibly eat. Don't put all the dishes out at one time. A woman wears all of her jewelry, but leaves something that she didn't wear. It's a type of a chain. Why? שנאמר, אם אשכחך ירושלים תשכח, אם איני תיבק לשוני לחכי. מי על ראש שמחתי, אמר ויצק, זה אפם מקלה שבראש חתנים. What does it mean that we have to put Yerushalayim on the head of our joy? When a chatan gets married, when a couple get married, we put a little bit of ashes on the head of the chatan. So there are certain things we do. We can't go crazy with avelut, but there are certain things that we do that are normative. We leave a little bit of the house undecorated. We don't put out all of the dishes. We don't put out. A woman doesn't wear all of her jewelry at the same time. A person doesn't overly celebrate. Even at a wedding, we put ashes on the head of the broom of the groom. Amara papala bai. Hey, manach leweshi. We put him in common tefillin instead of the tefillin. Neshum avlei tzion tachat lehem pe'er tachat efer. We should put pe'er, a glory, instead of efer, instead of ashes. Anybody that mourns for Jerusalem merits to see her joy. Rejoice in Jerusalem. Tanya, that's what the Gemara so far. So what does the Gemara say? We should recognize that there is a destruction of the temple. We shouldn't do too much. And the Purushim, you said these aesthetics who were off, they were a little bit too much. And Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim bring us back to the middle. We should make something significant. Every time you go into your house, you see this. Amal, amal, you remember. Every time you put out your dishes, you remember. Every time you get into your jewelry, you remember. Every wedding, we remember. That's what we do. That's the breaking of the glass. Not everybody has the custom to put ashes on the head of the chatan instead of the tefillin. But Yosef says, why? But we have a custom to remember. That's l'chor, the end. That would be the end of the Gemara. The Perek Shlishi of Baba Batra would end here. However, the Gemara adds another few lines, and this is what I wanted to think about. Amar Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, the Kohen Gadol for many, many, many years, said, Miyom Shecharab Beit HaMikdash, from the day that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, Dinu, by right, Shenigzo al Atzmeinu, Shelo Lechol Basar Velo Lishtot Yain, we should really make a decree upon ourselves not to eat meat and not to drink wine. But the sage did not issue a decree upon the public, unless the majority of the public able to abide by it. Rabbi Ishmael ben Elisha goes back to that idea that this should be normative halacha. This should be what we decide. And from the day that the wicked kingdom is referring to Rome, who decree evil and harsh decrees upon us, nullified Torah study and the performance of mitzvot for us, doesn't allow us to do brit milah, v'amila liyeshua ben, or maybe pidyona ben, who dinu, it should be the law, shenigzol atzmeinu, listen carefully, shelolisa isha, ulolid banim, to not get married and not have children. That should be normative practice. That the halacha should be that it's a sore to get married and have children. And we would find that the descendants of Avram Avinu will cease to exist by themselves. You don't need to do anything other than just not have children. Ela hanach lahem Yisrael mutav shiushogegim val yudu meisidim. But leave Israel, it's better they should be unwitting sins than intentional wrongdoers. Wow, wow, wow. You understand what we just read? Everyone understood that? Says Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, that really, after the destruction of the temple, we don't need the Jewish people. The Jewish people is finished, it's gone, it's had its day. And if we stop getting married and having children, that will be in line with what Lechora, what apparently God is telling us. That we don't want Jewish people anymore. You don't deserve it. We don't have Brit Milah. We don't have Pidyon HaBen. We can't learn Torah. We have no sacrifices. We should be destroyed. And since the Romans weren't able to finish off the job, so we will make it ourselves. We won't have children. And Nimsa Zarosh Shel Avraham Avinu Kaleh Me'Elav. But then he says, yeah, but the people are going to have kids anyway because I know them. So maybe we shouldn't say it because then they'll be unwitting sinners, and not intentional wrongdoers. That's a very powerful statement. That's how the third parak of Bava Batra ends. What do we hear here? Elisha, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha was the Kohen Gadol in the Beit Sheni. We can talk about destruction temple because we were never there. But if you came out of Europe and you saw destruction, you can speak about destruction because you saw it. If you saw your house destroyed, you can speak about it. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha saw it. And he said, do you want to continue with Jewish people after that? Impossible. He despairs. So what I hear from this Gemara, which is the Gemara could easily have censored this out, or it could have been left somewhere in Jewish history out of the Nusach HaMukubala, the Gemara, as many Midrashim are. The Gemara tells us this and says, think about this. This is the depths of despair that the Jewish people got to after the destruction of the temple. Wow. So that's a powerful Gemara. That's a powerful message. We're talking about not losing hope. How can we find hope in times of despair? Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha says, we're all over. It's finished. Nebuch, anach lem Yisrael. Nothing we can do about it. Don't say anything. But really, if you listen to me, I would say it's enough. We've had our day. We had our temple. We saw it destroyed. Finished. And if this was the only source that the Gemara gave us from that same era, we would be very depressed. And we would lose hope and would say, if Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, the Kohen Gadol for so many years, he could lose hope. So what's Weizmann going to do? Of course I'm going to lose hope. I need klum to Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. Yishmael ben Elisha would come in here, kulo esh. He would tell us, don't have children, and that's it, and forget it. We would turn to stone on the spot. But there's another Gemara, a Gemara that's much more well known. I want to take a moment to look through it. Of the people of exactly the same era, who also saw the destruction, who have a completely different reaction. That's the end of the Gemara in Masechet Makot. It's well known. We've learned it together several times. I wanted to read that through together. And the question is, A, what is their reaction? And the second thing we're going to have to work out is why. Why is their reaction so different? Yeah, of course, I'm sorry. Oh, wow. Everybody heard that? That's a great point. It doesn't say, now the temple's destroyed, we should be more compassionate to each other. Or we should care more about other people. Or we should be more particular about keeping Shabbat. Or any of the other mitzvahs. It doesn't say that. Shela, you think it's there? Oh, so that's the answer. Maybe you have to be non-excluded. But maybe there are times that we... Again, there's nothing about religious observance. It's just about doing this and doing this and don't having, don't eat sardines. I can live with that. But maybe if to be a nice guy, that's maybe a little harder than not eating sardines. I can live with that. All right, let's look at the next Gemara. Take a few minutes out to look at that. Okay, we good? Okay, somebody want to suggest what was the reaction of the in this Gemara, what's like the undercurrent? What's the reaction of the rabbis? What's the undercurrent of this Gemara? Good, bad? Yes, sir. In this piece of Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, you saw that? But what seems to be the undercurrent, how does the Gemara leave us? In the previous Gemara, Lester says, this Gemara, how does it leave us? It seems to be okay. Why? How do we get to that? Why is the reaction so different than we saw before? Anybody have an answer to that? That was your spec in your chavuta. Yes, sir. Okay. So you say the Navim said destruction, and they also said comfort. Okay, we're going to read on this Shabbat. You know, Bezrat Hashem, Nachamu, Nachamu from Yeshayahu, who also gave us a lot of criticism and warned us about destruction. Yes, sir, the back. Oh. So the gentleman said, thank you very much. When we see bad things, do we see them as isolated incidents, or do we see them as part of a continuum? And I'm going to come back to you in a moment. So let's read this Gemara together, which we all know, it's a famous Gemara. Let's read it together, and then we will, and then we'll try and understand. And we still have to come back to the spies and the map and Koltov. Okay, this sounds good. We're doing good. Haya Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Rabbi Yishuv, Rabbi Akiva. Why is that? Why Rabbi Bash? It should be Rabbi Akiva. I don't know why it says Rabbi Bash. It's come. You know, it's all messed up because of the font. All right, so Ayum Malchim Baderech said it, and I don't know why how they came messed up, and they heard the cry from Rome, from long, a very very far away, 120 mil away. You can see the English, and they started to cry, and Rabbi Kiva laughed, and he said to him, they said to him, why are you crying? Why are you laughing? And he said to them, why are you crying? And they said, the place that it said, these heathens, halalu kushim, shemishtachavim latzabim, they are doing well, and they're in treason bank. Well, us, beit medom hadom magle Eloheinu, saruf be'esh, that's the be'esh here, and what happened here. Ve'lo nifke, we shouldn't cry. Our house is destroyed, and look at these heathens, they're doing so great. That's why I'm laughing. How much, if that's the case, that they're getting paid back a little bit, when we get the big payback, oh, it's going to be really, really good. They get a little payback here. They get the big. We're going to get the big payback. So if they're getting a little bit of good and they're having these parties that you can hear 120 miles away, so how far away are you going to hear our party? Maybe the whole world? Reverberates from Misofo Olam Vatsofo. Tov. Continues the Gemara, v'shuv pam echad ayu olim liYerushalayim, kivan shegiu laHartzofim. When they came to Hartzofim, karu bigdehem, they tore their clothes. We spoke about that a few years ago about the tearing of the clothes. Kivan shegiu laHarabayit, ruushual shetem v'kodeshotim. When they get to Harabayit, when they get to the Temple Mount, they see a fox who's coming out of the Holy of Holies. It's all destroyed. No one's stopping them. No one stops them getting to. It's not like there's a wall around. There's nobody stops them to get to Har Habayit. Nobody stops them to seeing the Kodesh Kodeshim. Is this all desolate? They start to cry. Rabbi Kiva says, Rabbi Kiva laughs. Amulam ibnei matam eschek. They said to him, why are you laughing? Amalem ibnei matam bochim. Why are you crying? Amulam, what do you mean, why are we crying? At a place about which it says that the stranger, the non-Kohen who comes there, will die. And now foxes are coming in and out freely. Shouldn't we cry? Agav, that was reflected in the keynote. That line almost appears, almost word verbatim in the keynote, just that we read this morning about the idea of the Zara Karev Yumat, as opposed to the non-Jews who are able to get into the temple, and the keynote that we read about Titus coming into the temple. And he said to them, that's exactly why I'm laughing. What are you crying about? Because the temple is destroyed. You know why I'm laughing? Because the temple is destroyed. What is that? If we're supposed to be laughing because the temple is destroyed, why does everybody look so sad? Why are we sitting on the floor? Why are we eating? Why are we fasting? We should be happy. The temple's destroyed. Wait a second. That's what he says. Because he says, I will bring good, worthy witnesses. Who are they? Uriah and Zechariah. What's the connection between Uriah and Zechariah? Hare Uriah in Mikdash Rishon. Uriah is in the first temple. Zechariah in Mikdash Sheni. Zechariah is in the second temple. Ela tala gadum nevuato Zechariah benuvuato shel Uriah. But the Torah, the Pasuk that we saw from Isaiah, from Yeshayahu, makes dependent the nevuah of Zechariah on the nevuah of Uriah. On Uriah it says in Micha, Lachem biglalchem Tzion tzedet techash. Because of you, Zion will be set plowed over like a field. The Romans will come and they will plow it with salt, as they did, and they would make it unable to grow anything there. So they would destroy. We're completely desolate to the point that foxes can come in and out. Foxes are usually afraid of human beings. People don't really see foxes during the day. So the foxes are there, means it's completely desolate. That's what's going to happen. And but there's another nevuah of Zechariah. Od yeshvu zkenim uzkenot berchovot Yerushalayim. And again, old people and old men and women will sit in the streets of Yerushalayim. That's not talking about us. We're not old. But can you imagine that really old people will be sitting in the streets of Yerushalayim? Baruch Hashem, we'll be over sitting here learning Torah. So there's a nevuah that Sion's going to be rebuilt, that Zechariah promises us. So Uriah promises us that the temple will be destroyed, completely desolate, nothing there, foxes. And then Zechariah promises us it's going to be rebuilt. Says Rabbi Akiva, that's why I'm laughing. Until the prophecy of Zechariah of Uriah was fulfilled and that temple is completely destroyed, I was worried that they won't fulfill the nevuah, the prophecy of Zechariah. Not that I was worried, but I didn't know when it was going to happen. I didn't know when the process was going to start. Now that the prophecy of Uriah, here we see it, here we're looking at it, we just saw the foxes come out, so we know that it's destroyed. Biyadua, it's gonna happen. Biyadua, it's a given. It must happen now. Shenevuto shel Zechariah mitkeimet. That Zechariah's prophecy will happen. It's yadua. Can you imagine being with someone that it's yadua? Like that's just a matter of time, chevre. How long? Since Rabbi Akiva till now, 1,800 years. Aval yadua, yadua. Here we are. Lord Tim. In this world, they said to him, Akiva, you have comforted us, Akiva, you have comforted us. What's going on? And that's how the Gemara, that parak of Makot and the whole Masechet of Makot finishes. So we understand there's a dissonance. The Gemara in Masechet Baba Batra, the end of the third parak, ends with Yishmael ben Elisha saying, Nebuch, really we should offend the Jewish people, but people won't listen to us. And you end up, if you're like, you know, doing a siyum on the end of the third parak of Baba Batra, that's a depressing siyum. That's what you read, and the end of that's it. Now you have like a little bit of kugel and herring, and you feel a little sad. You don't have to have herring, because we just said you don't have to have little fish, so you get rid of the herring, you have something else. Kilo Nebuch, and then you feel a little bad about drinking schnapps, because we don't really have. And then you get to the end of Masechet Makot, which is not that much, it's only two Masechetot later, you end in Masechet Makot, and you're like, great, wow, this is amazing. Yeah, kiva nechamtanu. And now we raise up high the herring and the schnapps and the kugel, and we feel great. What happened? What's the difference? And the Gemara, and that's the greatness of Jewish literature, never shies away from presenting us different opinions. Not of me, Gideon Weitzman, but of Gedolei Yisrael like Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha and Rabbi Akiva. It never shies away. They thought differently. That's okay. What was the difference? Next page. Towards the end. So you didn't think you'd get away with that Rav Kook, right? Rav Kook in Orot HaTshuva says the following. הטבע העולמי וכל יציר פרטי, ההיסטוריה האנושית וכל איש יחידי ומעשיו צריכים להיות מסופרים בסקירה אחת. The nature of the world, הטבע העולמי, וכל יציר פרטי and every individual creation. ההיסטוריה האנושית, human history, or the history of humanity, וכל איש יחידי and every individual person, ומעשיו, and their actions need to be surveyed in one broad view. We need to see the world, not as individual events, but we need to see the run of history. We need to understand how every action contributes to a much broader reality than just the individual episode, as the gentleman said before so beautifully. He says, okay, what happens when we do that? As one entity with different parakim, with different parts, with different episodes. And only then, and then the light of comprehension quickly appears that brings to repentance. Says Rav Kook, you know the problem of the world? Is we look at things individually. We read the Kinot and we have a Kinah about the burning of the Torah and burning of the Talmud and the destruction of the communities along the Rhine River. And then we have the destruction of the York Temple. We look at these events as very individual events. Just look again, but let's look at all history from Adam HaRishon until today. What's the movement of the world? Is it up or down? Are we healthier, stronger than we were in the past? Yeah. Is there a greater understanding, a greater communication between people? Yeah. Are we doing better? Yeah. My Rav loves to tell the story that he was a meeting of Rabbanim because of the terrible, sorry state of the Jewish people in the Eretz Israel. So they get together, Rabbanim, Atzionut Adatit, and they're sitting waiting for the meeting to start. And he's sitting there, and there's a Shmuel Eliyahu from Tzfat. He says, no, how's Tzfat doing? Oh, Tzfat's wonderful. We just opened a new school. Says the Rav Dorli from the Kiryat Shmona. How's Kiryat Shmona? Oh, wonderful. There's a new girls' school. There's a new, wonderful, wonderful. Goes to Rav Michal Levi from Petah Tikva. No, how's it going? Oh, Petah Tikva, nifla, wonderful. You know, we just opened a new ganim. He says, if it's so good, what are we meeting about? Right? So when we see, we don't see it because we hear about all the terrible things. But the newspaper has to fill every day from page one until the end. Mostly of bad things that happen. So when we read it, we see how terrible it is. But when we look at the skira of everything, Baruch Hashem. Says Rav Kook, then we suddenly have understanding. And if you notice carefully, Rav Kook spelled history wrong. You notice that? Historia is spelled with a tet, not with a taf. Rav Kook always spelled history with a taf. Because historia, Rav Yehuda liked to say, Rav Kook's son liked to say, is hysteria. It's the hiding of God's face. God hides in history. Hegel said the same thing, by the way, but we're not going to get there now. That God is revealed lat lat. And that's what Rabbi Akiva understood. And Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha sees the event of the destruction. The event of the destruction, my friends, is a terrible, terrible thing that we should never forget. And we sit on the floor yearly. Annually we gather here to remember it and to recall it. But if we don't understand it in context, we don't understand anything. Many years ago, I was in England. I was working for a year and I needed to prepare an activity for Tisha B'Av. And I didn't really have any time. I was busy. And the only time I had was Yom HaTzmut afternoon. Yom HaTzmut in England, there's no barbecue, there's no matas. You know, so we went. So I went to Jews College and I was sitting in the library preparing a pula for Tisha B'Av. And the legendary librarian at Jews College, Ezra Khan, happens to be my wife's uncle. He was also my wife's uncle, she was my wife, but now he's my wife's uncle. He came up to me and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm preparing for Tisha B'Av. He said, you? Today? Mele, I don't keep the Yom HaTzmut, but you? So I said to him, I don't remember exactly, I said to him, but in my mind's eye, I see that I said to him that if you don't understand Tisha B'Av, and Yom Ha'atzmaut, you don't really understand either of them. That if we don't understand on Yom Ha'atzmaut the relevance of Tisha B'Av, then we missed out something on Yom Ha'atzmaut. But if we're sitting on Tisha B'Av and we don't recall Yom Ha'atzmaut, which was only 2 months ago, if we don't recall that, then we don't really understand Tisha B'Av today. And that's what Rav Kook says. That to understand Historia, to understand the revelation of God's plan, we have to see a much broader view. And when we see a broad view, suddenly everything becomes clear. And that's what Rabbi Akiva says to them. And that's what they're comforted by. And that's what is so significant about Rabbi Akiva's message on that lonely hill 2,000 years ago, is that you have to understand Uriah and Zechariah in context. You can't understand just Uriah without Zechariah. And most of the Jewish people, my friends, are stuck in Uriah. We're stuck in Churban HaBayit. And we didn't realize that the world's actually changed. That a little bit we can get up. A little bit we can sit on chairs. A little bit we can rejoice. We can start, you know, there's a gezerah in Yerushalayim that you're not allowed to have singing at a wedding. There should be no music at a wedding. So Rav Suda said we can start to play music already. It's already different. It's not the same that it was in the time of the Mishnah Berurah. So let me come back to the map. Come back to the map. Come.
All right. We see what's going on. How many places do we have? Okay, we have Hamat, Yarden, 2. Midbar, Sin, and Negev, they all went 2. 3, 4, 5, 6.
We have 6 places. Listen to the Natsiv. Okay, you're holding them. And then let you go. Says the Natsiv, and I make the vow on the last page. The Natsiv of Kuk's Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. The amazing Natsiv who had a phenomenal goal to write a parush, more than one, he wrote 2, on the Torah. And he changes our whole understanding because the Natsiv had this amazing understanding of language. He could see language that, you know, words that people don't see. This is what he says. V'ya'alu b'negev. Listen to the Natsiv carefully. You guys with us. Sipur prati mashayayim anashim shalhu b'negev. They went up into the Negev. This is the individual story of what happened to the men who went to the Negev. They didn't all go together. They were divided into 12. And therefore, they were able to complete the journey in 40 days. And therefore, the Torah speaks about the 2 who went up to the Negev. Says the Natsiv, they didn't all go to all these places.
2 went here, and 2 went here, and 2 went here, 2 went here, 2 went here, 2 went here. And therefore, the people that went to Hamat, they went all to Hamat. Takes them 20 days to get to Hamat. They see Hamat, they come back down. The people into the Yam just went to the Yam. Kalev, we know, goes to Hebron, because the Torah tells us. 2 went to Har, 2 went to Yarden, and 2 went to Nachal Eshkol. They all come back through Midbar Tzin and Negev, and they come back to Midbar Kadesh, which is next to Eilat. So they divide the land between them. They don't all go to the same place. Thank you very much. Tada Rabbah, you're amazing. Next time we need someone to map, carry a map, I'll remember you guys. You're great. Tada Rabbah.
That's what Natsiv says. Yes, sir. Sure. It makes a lot of sense. How could they, even if you just want to walk up to Haman and go to all those places, you don't have time in 40 days? So the answer is, those that went nearer spent more time. They could come back with a much better report. The ones that went to Haman, why they go to Haman is a good question, I don't know. But they go to Haman, they had to go to Haman and come back pretty quickly because they didn't have any time. It's an amazing thing. So there's, yes, sir.
Good question. So Rashi doesn't understand like you, but it's a good question. Rashi understands like saying like the gum, but it's a good question. We don't really know where the yam is. But the Natsiv say they divided it up.
So there are 2 great kids' books. There are lots and lots of great kids' books, but the 2 that I wanted to speak about. One is about a group of blind mice who chance across an elephant. You read this book? And there's another book which is very similar about an elephant that turns up in some, you know, European town. And they try to describe what it is. And the blind mice, each mouse takes a different part of the elephant. One looks at the foot. One touches the trunk. One the tusks. One the hair. one the ears. And they come back and describe, they're blind, so they describe it, what they can see, what they have discovered to each other. In the book where the elephant turns up in a European town, the firemen say, this is great, this is a new fire engine that can squirt water. And the schlepper say, this is something that can schlep. And that every task sees in the elephant that element that will help them. Where did that book come from? It's a pasuk mefurash. Look together. Vayomer elav Balak, last verse. Lecha na'iti el makom acher, asher tirena misham, efes katseyu tire, v'chulo lo tire, v'kavnoli misham. Translation. Balak said to him is Bilam, come with me to another place from which you can see them. You'll see only a portion of them. You won't see all of them, and curse them for me from there. Everybody remembers the story. You read it not so long ago in the Torah. Bilam is a curser. He is a wizard who likes to curse. And Balak needs people cursed. They're the Jewish people. They just came out of Egypt. And they're about to come into his land, and they're a little bit threatening him. So he dials up, call a curse, www.cursethejewishpeople.com, and he gets this guy, Bilam. And Bilam comes along and he says, God doesn't really want me to come with you. He said, no, God still really doesn't want me to come with you, but I'll speak to him. He speaks to God. God says, oh, you want to go? Bye. And he's on the way, and the donkey talks to him. Donkeys can talk. We know that from Shrek, so he can talk. So donkey talks to him and says, really, you shouldn't go. And an angel appears to him and says, you can only go, but you have to say what I'm going to tell you. And Bilak comes to Balak, and Balak's very excited. And he builds these mizbechot, he builds these altars, and he says to them, offer up sacrifices for them, and curse, and we'll curse God. And he's about to curse them, and in fact, he blesses them. Tries it again, same thing. So Balak has a great idea, which is this verse. Let's see what he says. Let's go to another place where you can see them. You can't see them, doesn't help. But what will be special about this place as opposed to the two places we've just been? You can't see all of them. You can only see part of them. And then you'll be able to curse. And the Hasidim say, that's an amazing thing. Because in the Jewish people, we have a tzibur. The word tzibur is an acronym for tzadikim, benonim, and rasha'im. There's always tzadikim, there's always in-betweenies, and there's always evil people. And a tzibur is comprised of all of those. And in order to have a tzibur, we need to have all of those. And in fact, the Gemara tells us that any tzom, any fast day in which there isn't a rasha'im is not really a fast day. You have to bread. The wicked have to be involved in our fast day as well. And when we see the whole community together, now you come on Yom Kippur, and there's people who are regular goers, and people who are just once a year, and people who just turned up, see them together, and they're all worshiping. It's a very, very empowering experience. But if we divide them up into individuals, if we divide them up into parts, it doesn't always look that way. Says Balak to Bilam, you know how you're going to be able to curse? I got it. I hub it. You're not going to curse him when you see all of them. But if you just see part of it, you'll be able to curse. Because you won't see the whole picture. Not seeing the whole picture, we're missing out the bracha. Because the bracha comes when we see the whole picture, not part of the picture. And that's the truth in anything in our lives. That the bracha really comes from really seeing the entire continuum and entire spectrum, same with our children, it's the same with our own lives, our professional lives, our personal lives. It's the same in our national life. That to understand, to really get a grasp of historia in Rav Kook's sense, we have to see an entire continuum. We can't see a part. And therefore, Balak says to Bilam, you know, I understand that the whole thing is bracha, but maybe a part is kala. And that's what happened with the spies. The Netziv tells us, you know, they didn't see the whole picture. You come to Eretz Yisrael, you see part of it. It's the luck of the draw what part you see. If you see a good bit, you're going to love it. And a bad bit, you're going to hate it. And we'll take it away from Israel, but I'm sure many of us had experience, and I had this experience as well. I fortunately, unfortunately, travel a tremendous amount for my work. And I've been to many, many, many cities. And there are cities that I love, and there are cities that I've almost made a shvua I'm never, ever going to go back to. And it's based usually on my personal experience on the 2 or 3 days I was there, the 1 day I was there. If you had a good experience, you love that city. If you had a bad experience, you hate that city. How much have I seen that city? If you lived in a city for a year, 2, 5, 10, then you can say that I really know the city. But to be there for 1 day in Kol HaKavod, that's exactly like the Meraglim. The Netziv said, you know, the point of the Meraglim, it's not just the Torah tells us these places, not just because these are the places that they went. But it wants to give us a much deeper message. They only saw a part of the story. One saw the Negev. One saw Hebron. One saw Hamat. One saw Yarden. They only saw a bit of it. And therefore they weren't able to achieve Bracha. And they come back to Moshe, and you read it already, and they say, it's a terrible place. And that's the story of Rabbi Akiva. How can we lose hope? Very easy, if we just see his part. We saw one terrible incident. We experienced a horrible occasion. We, on ourselves, or our people, have experienced terrible times. And we fall into despair like Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha, who says, oh my gosh, after the destruction, there isn't a Jewish people. Comes to Rabbi Akiva with a completely different perspective. Rabbi Akiva says, you're so right that that's a calamity. I also ripped my clothing when I came to Mount Scopus. When I came to Har Tzofim, I also ripped my clothing, recognizing that this is a sad incident. But it's an incident on the run of Jewish history. Our obligation is to see the whole of God's world, to understand the run of history, to, yes, sit on the floor on Tisha B'Av, but recognize that not long ago we celebrated Yom HaTzmut, that not long ago we celebrated the wonderful miracle that we have merited in our generation to see a change in Jewish history. Only when we realize the entirety of the Jewish experience, only when we can see God's world in one broad view, as one entity divided into different parts, only then, as Rav Kook says, does the light of comprehension appear. Only when we can see the entirety do we have bracha. And so our tefillah and our bracha and our understanding is that we have started to see the beginning of the change of Jewish history. We should merit to continue to see that. And even when it seems to be somewhat hidden, when it is hysteria, when God's face is hidden in history, we should merit to be able to have this incredibly broad view like Rabbi Akiva, who's able to detract himself from the event and see the process. And when we see the process, we turn to Hashem and say, Marabu Masach Hashem. This is an amazing, amazing run. This is an amazing broad view. This is an amazing one huge entity that you, God, have brought and that we celebrate. That we understand when to cry, but we also must understand when to laugh. We understand when it is difficult, but we understand that in context of the entire picture. Shalom, shalom.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.